Hello and welcome to another episode of the Edgy Futurist podcast. I don't know what number we're on, somewhere in the 200s, somewhere of the real numbers. And it is good to be back having another conversation, Mr. Hope. How goes it?
I feel tired today. I shouldn't tell people, but we're recording at 7:30 as well, so I don't know how I feel so tired. Only joking. We're not recording at 7:30 in the morning. But yeah, good. It's been a busy week. Been at my desk. Next week is absolute chaos. I am travelling along the rugby league corridor, backwards and forwards, for a lot of travelling next week. But yeah, it should be good. And yes, I've started a new book. It's one that I've had for a while. Serena Wiegman, What It Takes, the focus on leadership of the women's England football manager. So I'm excited to really start to unpick it. I finished the Kevin Sinfield book now, and moving on to the next one. I've been writing, as a dad of two young children, I've been reading a couple of bits about children behaviour and why my children are so feral. But do you know if we... trying to unpick that, whether all children are feral or whether it's just mine, the one that I'm really enjoying at the minute is Serena Wiegman. So yeah, how about you, Ben? Any new bits of learning? You're mega into podcasts.
Yeah,
I know as a podcast host, we should think we are, but any good ones this week?
Yeah, so I've just finished reading Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday, which I talk about quite a lot. I love that Stoic philosophy stuff, so that's always been quite interesting. I've been listening to a few podcasts recently. Stephen Bartlett's most recent one probably isn't one for our podcast, talking about actually with a sex coach, which was quite interesting. That was an interesting listen. But most recently, the one that I have really enjoyed has been Will Storr having a conversation with Joe Rogan. And he talks about this idea of the status game. And it's a fantastic listen where he's talking about how people behave in certain societies and certain groups based on how we behave. And I think that's really powerful from an education perspective, and from the stuff that we talk about, thinking around status. Like, you think about the lad or the kid that's the cock of the school, and then you've got the jack the lad, and then you've got the others in that space who are might be the nerds or the D&D crew or the sports jocks or whatever else we want to call them. That there's different status and that in that space. So yeah, it's that was a great listen. And there's a few other bits that I've been on Wii, but yeah, it's been good. I do love that kind of learning. And we've actually been sent a few books as well, haven't we, Steve, for upcoming guests? Yes. Around like AI and the future education, and then one about primary AI and all other stuff, loads of other bits, not just about AI. There are other words that we can spell that talking about future education. So exciting.
As always, mate.
As always. So we are very, very much delighted to be joined by another guest. Actually, a proper international one again today. I know we get people from South Africa, and we've had people from the US and Canada and other places. I can't think of any others off the top of my head. There are loads, right? Australia, New Zealand. We've had all sorts. We are joined today by Johannes who is joining us from Cologne in Germany. I think this is the first guest that we've had from Germany. Oh, no, that's not true. We had
we had the guys, and Gerd Leonard.
So we've had a few. So I apologize. You're not the first,
not first.
But you're still important.
First this season, Ben.
Yeah. We'll bring Johannes in. Johannes, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Ben. Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
It is it's wonderful to have you. And I know that we have had a few back and forth conversations about how we can get you on and talk about what you do, who you are. So thank you for finding the time for us. I wonder if you could just give us and our guests a little bit of an introduction to Johannes and how you got to where you are.
All right, sure. I got my first touch points with education when I studied cognitive science as my first degree, trying to understand really how the brain works. And a big part of this is how it learns. And these thinking processes really, I think, are super exciting. Then I got a bit more into computational things, trying to model the brain. And I also always had this interest in teaching. And I did have some students at university that I were also trying to cheat a little bit, and my back then girlfriend, now wife, as a teacher, and she had some very good students, but also some lazy ones. And then when I finished my degree at university, I wanted to do her a favor, and I thought I'd write a little tool to detect these people that just copy from web, mostly Wikipedia back then. And that became a big plagiarism tool that until it was acquired a while ago by Vitalit In. And but still, my interest in like how people learn that always remained very active. And of course, now, as you mentioned, like AI in education is everywhere. And that also came to me. And I think it can be a great tool and help us a lot in education, in tutoring for all of the kids around the world that want to learn. But then, as always, as with Wikipedia, there's also the danger that people would just take it too easy and be a bit lazy and not question the things they get from these tools. And that's actually why I'm here today. I wanted to tell you about this problem and some solutions I have in mind.
Love it. So coming from a background of cognitive science and how understanding how the brain works, if we can dig in there, and I think that might be a useful start. So you obviously had an interest in how the brain works, and then that then obviously links into a lot of the stuff that we talk about, metacognition in education and understanding how students learn and they're learning how they learn. So I wonder if you could maybe give us some insights that might be relevant from that world into education.
I studied it. I'm not an expert, but from my understanding, there's really it's super important to practice and to reflect on what you do. And that's what we always try to do in the schools, right? So we take the pupils at the point where they are at, like the education level that they have already, what they know already, and let them give them a challenge that is like interesting, but it's not too hard for them. And then from there, they get learn the ways that they can think properly and structure their work. And then also memorize, build like a network of memories. And I think that that can work great and is perfect if you can totally tailor it to the student. And I think that is often what teachers try to do, but it's also very hard, of course, if you have like a big class in front of you, everybody is different. And then making sure that everybody gets something that exactly suits them, what they know, their skills and so on. That is very hard. And I think in such cases, we can do a lot with the latest AI developments that are coming in. And I think that's an area where, where I think we can do a lot of work. And there can also be challenges, as always, like this can be abused, I suppose, would be the word. And people could rely on this too much and not develop their thinking processes anymore. And I think that might be a danger, that we become too lazy and to rely too much on these tools.
It's an interesting thing. Technology, in many guises over the years, has always been that thing of, we could become lazy. This could stop us from doing this. The calculator, I remember calculator's been brought in when I was going through GCSEs. We got a GCSE calculator exam in maths, and they were saying, but you're not going to do it in both, because ultimately, you need to know all of these things, because you're not just always relying on a calculator. I can't remember, if I'm honest, the last time that I did any maths in terms of simple calculations without a calculator. It's on my phone. And then there was the internet that obviously really kicked off, and it was a case of, but if the internet exists and YouTube exists, then ultimately it's going to replace teachers and kids are going to be lazy. If the internet exists, you'll just copy from it. And now it's exactly the same thing with AI, but now AI exists, people will just copy from it. So Is it a new problem that AI brings, or actually is it just the challenges of our understanding of it and how we can utilize it for good rather than thinking about potentially the real negative connotations that could come from AI? We will tackle those, but what's your thoughts on those bits?
Good point, Steve. No, that's very true. I would never say, like, let's totally forbid any use of AI. That would be hold us back. And of course, it's also just not going to work. And it's similar to the, let's go with the calculator thing. I suppose very much in the UK, you also would first need to learn to do your math. I guess your two kids would first learn to do, you know, in their head, think and make the calculations by themselves, so they do know how it would work. And that doesn't mean that then later on you would, once you understood that and the thinking processes are in place, then of course you would use tools, and that will allow you to reach much higher and achieve new things. But first, you should do that actually, and by hand, manually, so that you do know how it works. And I think this is similar to what we have in AI. It can be a very useful tool if you already know how writing and works, and how structuring texts work. So if you would never have learned this, then you would really lack this skill. And I think writing is very much also connected to these thought processes that run in the background. So if you never learn to write something on your own, like structure a text, how to get across your thoughts, then this will really be a big skill that is missing from your brain.
And interesting in that space, there is a... Everybody always is always looking for a shortcut, right? So I think when I'm driving, I was driving to a college locally, and I was looking. I got a little message on my Google Maps that said a faster route is available. I've never ever seen that button and thought, nah, I'll go for the longer route. I always click shortcut. I always click faster of it, choose that route, accept route. I've never ever been somewhere and thought to myself, apart from when I was doing cross country. And interestingly, when I was doing cross country as a kid, I know that there was a shortcut and I could have got away with it because nobody else, there were two of us running together. I were fast at that point and there weren't as many people behind me, in front of me or whatever else around. So at that point, we could have snuck through and made a shortcut, but we didn't. We carried on running in that freezing cold cross country race. But then again, what we're talking about here in an education space is that we don't want to deny the process that happens in learning, because often what we're trying to do is when we're trying to learn something, we're trying to get to the destination first, so that we know something, right, or that we can do something. And the learning isn't necessarily the end point. The learning is the bit that goes through to that point. And I think that's what you're talking about here, is that if you can write an essay about, I don't know, about Kantian philosophy, like some of my religious studies teachers would have done, religious studies students would have done. But ultimately, the output of writing that is not the same as having an understanding that the process that gets you to that point and being able to then justify and argue. So I think what we're trying to get to is that AI will help people get to the destination quicker. There's no doubt about it. It almost always will help people get to the destination quicker. And all the technology that we're using is helping people get to the destination quicker. But is that at the expense sometimes of the learning process? And I think that's something to consider. And I think that's what you're trying to talk about there, right?
Exactly. Thanks for putting it in the right words. And I think that really is an issue, right? So if you use ChatGPT to write your email number 1000, that is more or less the same standard email, then of course that is totally fine. And I'm very sure you would also, if there was no ChatGPT, you would still know how to do it on your own. But the big worry is that if you never ever learned this, like to write an essay, and as you said, like this, the process is so much more than just writing those 5,000 words that you end up with. You would touch on different sources, you would think about them, you would rewrite your text, and change it a lot of times to get your argument or your point across. And I think this is super important for the learning process, for the thinking processes.
Yeah, absolutely. So thinking around this then, and then obviously it ties into the work that you're doing now. One of the things that we talked about and one of the things that we were looking forward to speaking to you about was this idea of how you create technology that can help in the space of using it for redefining those teaching and learning processes, because what you are trying to do and we will get into what you do as a business now, but one of the things is about redefining teaching and learning processes, right? So what talk to me about what that means and how you see technological innovations doing that redefinition piece.
All right, let me try to answer that. So talked to teachers and professors about what they do about ChatGPT and other AI tools, then we heard a lot, like some try to completely ban this from use in school, and others try to do like some very close surveillance of the students, like talking to them every day about their progress and asking them to have a diary on how they progress, and this seems all more or less working, but not really solving this problem, and that's where we thought we could probably invent something and make this, well, not maybe not fully go away, but at least have a tool that would help and minimize the problems that come from this, while still allowing the use of AI tools within the policies that the institution would set. And I think that is what a good technology tool can do. Those things that you come up with, that you, how you can see to improve it manually, that would be a crazy amount of work to reduce this to like a reasonable amount of work, but and never taking the human fully out of the equation. So you will always have you will always need a human, I guess, at the end to make some decisions and run the system, but the tools should be really optimizing this process.
Yeah, I think that's in the work that I do, I've spent a lot of time with Google. Google have 7 core principles in terms of their ethical responsibilities and codes of practice around their AI use, and everything is around point of contact of a human and a teacher. So it's not trying to replace, it's not trying to remove, it's saying that it's been used as a tool. I think a lot of AI tools are saying, what we will do is we'll completely, the worry is that people are, they'll negate the fact that it's going to be students not creating their own work, so it's going to be computers or AI writing assignments, that teachers are then writing assignments, the feedback at the end of the year and the grade reporting is going to be not by a teacher, it's going to be by AI. And it's like, where do humans play a part in this? What is the point? What is the long-term gain if it ultimately it's just computers or AI talking to each other, marking each other's work and then writing a report at the end of it? It's like, what's the point in all of it? And that's kind of the dystopian fear, I think, of everybody. So it's great to hear that you're talking about that, you know, that touch point and being used by people. How do you see that in terms of scalability and everything else? You know, how does that, what you're talking about, scale across an organization, and what training mechanisms do we have to put in place for tools like that you're talking about, for educators and students to use them effectively?
I think in a good tool using AI would take into account the experiences and the knowledge, the goals and the criteria of the teacher, but then be able to apply this to the individual student, thereby maximizing the impact of the teacher. And so that's what that teacher normally would be able to do, but like for time limitations, of course, only be able to do maybe for 3 or 5 out of the class of 30 or so. That, to some degree, I think we can scale out. So we can try and put this knowledge and experience that the teacher would apply, ideally, if time permitting, to all of the students, to get this into AI form. And to some degree, it will never be 100%, but to some degree, give it to all of these students, like taking into account their individuality, where they stand. And then next step, ideally, collect some of that the feedback or where the students are, and provide that in an aggregated form to the teacher as a feedback. To the one main thing I could see there is when now from these 30 students in my example, then two would have like a red flag because I don't know, they are stuck, they have some trouble. Then the teacher could really have time and attention directed towards those two.
I think I love this idea about personalization, right? So let's go into that space, because I think that ties really nicely of both of us who in these podcasts we regularly get to talk about AI. We've been talking about AI since before most people talked about AI in an education setting, at least. Even pre ChatGPT, right? So we love the fact that everybody thinks that ChatGPT was only AI was only invented in November 2022, I do love the fact that we can we're talking about like how we can use the intelligences that can come from a computer way pre ChatGPT. And one of the big things that we always talked about was the desire for the one size fits all curriculum that seems to be normalized in almost every education system in the world, where there is a Department for Education that tends to be of a certain demographic of people that dictate what needs to be learnt at what age group, and therefore what happens in that age group and in that year group. Here is the curriculum, the national curriculum or a version of a national curriculum that every person in that class will learn at that age. Then they'll do an assessment that is predetermined for that age group that proves that they are on track for their age group, or they are behind, or they are in front and they're making better than expected progress. And that is the perpetual thing of, as soon as formal schooling starts at 4 years old in the UK, all the way through to it finishing at 18 at the end of A levels or the end of vocational qualifications there, and then they go into university, and that's when personalization really happens. Okay, because then you can choose what you're really doing, and there's no prescriptive course content in the same way, although there is still some there. So because there's a one-size-fits-all concept, because there is a prescribed curriculum, and there is like milestones that young people and any age learners actually need to jump to and arrive at, that's where we've created this systemic processing around what we do in terms of knowledge, skills, behaviors and the like. Now, what we're talking about realistically is that, and we know this, and every good teacher and every good education leader knows this, is that every child or young person in a classroom is coming, is not a tabula rasa. So tabula rasa as a philosophical concept, John Locke talked about actually that whether we are a blank slate or whether we come into any situation with preconceived ideas. And that is absolutely the case. Things that would naturally come to me might not naturally come to Steve. Things that naturally come to Steve don't naturally come to me. So in terms of understanding experiences, training that we've already had, the people that we've met, our parents and their level of skill and education, all them things made an impact on our tabula, right? So we're not a tabula rasa. So we are going into a space, and at 4 years old, even then, there is a marked difference between me and the other four-year-olds in that class all the way through, and that's changing all the time. So if we can even suggest that the same curriculum and assessments and teaching and learning style will be okay for every child in that classroom, and then more broadly every child at that age in an education system, then we are totally missing the point, right? So what we're talking about here is how do we personalize that learning and make that learning effective for the individual? Yeah. So one of the things that I know you do, one of the things that you do, which really comes across as powerful, is around this idea of how we can create almost like a personalized, individualized tutor in that space. And I know that we're gonna get more in depth about the work you do at Mentify, but that personalization, where does that? Is it the agreement with what we're saying there? Is it that everybody needs to get to that personalized mode?
Yeah, you could say that. So the idea is really to have like a learner model and get to understand where the student is, what they know, what skills they are good at, and where they might need a little more help, and then give them the right support so they can get the maximum out of it. And we focus particularly on writing, so like essay writing or later on thesis writing. And there you usually have to, there's like a lot of different challenges, right? So some people might be a bit in trouble over their grammar or not be native speakers, so they need help with finding the right words. And others are more in trouble with how they research for their topic and structure their question. And we think really that is it's necessary and possible and a good use to use AI for these tasks, so to assist the student, but at the same time not writing the text like for them, right? So it would go too far. And at least on the education level that we're talking about here, so going back to Steve's example with the calculator, so I suppose now when you are a journalist and you write your 1,000th article or so on the topic, then of course you can get some help there. But at the level we look at, the studies we heard about say that doing the writing like by hand, even if it takes some time, is important for the learning process.
Yes, I make notes still on paper. Ben, I think you're a digital note taker. But apart from my scribbled notes, I just don't write at all. I don't write at all. And I haven't probably. Just trying to think. When I was at university, typing up and submitting, that was an interesting one. They also, when I was at university, journals and books. You had to go to journals. Books were okay. Websites, they could be changed on a regular basis and weren't a source of content. I think the world of education and universities has changed beyond that. So I understand, obviously, the structure of writing and the need for writing, but it's like going, my opinion is, and I saw this where it was like, go, I think it was GCSE English last year, where it's like, write a letter to so-and-so. And I was like, if I'm honest, I don't think my kids are going to be writing letters in the written form. Maybe I'm completely wrong there, but my opinion is, I'm like, if I haven't in the last 10 years written a letter, is there a need for it? And that's going against.
I'm going to jump in there before I ask you, Johanna. Sorry, I know you're the guest, but I'm going to come in there because I think I don't like that. Right. So I'm only saying this, Steve. I love you, mate.
Just to clarify. This is my opinion. I'm not saying that whether it's right or wrong. What I'm saying is, I haven't written, apart from notes, anything long form for a long period of time. So is it wrong that I haven't done it?
No, No, I'm not saying you're wrong for doing it. I'm not saying you're wrong. What I'm saying is, and I agree, because I am a digital note taker. Actually, I'm a digital note taker, but I use my Apple Pencil to write my notes. So, but then I also have a pen and a paper, and I write with a pen. I write a diary, a journal, which is a handwritten journal. Interestingly, a friend of mine, Richard, who probably won't be listening, but might be if I tell him that I've talked about him in this. Richard is probably one of the best people that you'll ever meet when it comes to that kind of, and he writes cards to people on a regular basis. In fact, one of the more recent business ventures that we're working on really is about encouraging people to do the handwritten thing, because of you get something like a moon pig. I don't know if you have something like moon pig in Germany, Johannes, like moon pig or a funky pigeon. They are like where you can go online, choose a card design, type in what you want in it, and then they post it to people's houses. Like it just feels a little bit impersonal, even though you can put photographs on it and this and that and the other. And I really think the power of the pen is important. And interestingly, there is some research about the cognitive science about how you remember more likely to remember something if you handwrite it than if you type it. But you're right, Steve. To suggest that this is to write a letter, they might not even understand what writing a letter looks like, because they might have never received a handwritten letter in a book. I don't know, that's what you were saying, isn't it? I know you weren't saying that we don't need to write, Steve.
I wasn't saying let's stop children writing. What I was saying is in terms of the need for, in context, like, you know, do we need to change? So, for example, we get them to write still in terms of the skill, but do we focus on practicing writing an email, but in written form first? Or something else. I know they will never do that, but they're probably more likely to write an email in digital than they would type a letter up in digital. I think the skill and the development. Johannes, come in. I can see you nodding. I can see the frustration. If anybody's just listening to the podcast rather than watching it, he's ready to unmute and he's ready to go at it. So come on.
I think you're right. The means of communication are changing, and of course they can write the emails, or nowadays they might, I don't know, text to some other chat service or so. But important is that they learn to communicate, I suppose. And similarly with essays, that's not so much about the topics you write about, or what kind of. If you do it in, I don't know, dictated into your phone or what way you do it, but that you actually really reflect a topic in depth and make sure that you get your argument across, then you would think it over and restructure this. And I think this is kind of super important if later on you want to argue, I don't know, and if you go into politics, or if you are a manager, and in a lot of jobs you will need to explain stuff to people, and you will need to make an argument. And I think if you never get to learn this and only had AI do this for you, then you would be in trouble, right? And it might be hard then when you need it in your job to come up with the right explanations, and you might struggle and not be able to explain yourself.
Yeah, and I think what you're, correct me if I'm wrong, in terms of the company that you founded, in terms of Mentify, it's around using AI to be able to develop and support those skills in terms of writing, trying to go through that process of supporting that mechanism rather than just writing it for it. It's a case of using it as a tool, mentor, guide, and kind of to be help to students that could journal and diarize and form. And I suppose my challenge is as a dyslexic, I was never really taught a passion. A passion of mine was never to be taught to be writing. I do journal, Ben, or I use Stephen Bartlett's on a regular basis. It is structured and it guides me, because I think me starting from scratch would be a real challenge. And I think the use of AI that you're talking about here is to kind of guide in a structural way how mm-hmm. students can develop their writing. Is that where we're at in terms of what your focus is as a company?
Yeah, that sounds pretty accurate. We did not. It's not rocket science, but we talked to teachers and how they would actually, if they had the time, how they work with their students. And of course, they would do exactly this. So they would look at where they are, what their thoughts are, what they have done to that point, and then would accordingly suggest what to do next, and where they could improve, what they maybe should think over. And this process is what we try to capture and get into our product. And so that is basically something that teachers are already doing anyway. And it's just not working out. It's just too much work to do this for 30 students at the same time. And I think we have already come pretty far on that way. And with that tool, yeah, similar to what the teacher does when they focus on the process of the writing, instead of only looking at the end product. And I suppose, at least for the cases when I had a really good good teachers, or also later for my thesis supervisor, that was really was great learning experience when they gave me some feedback. And of course, they couldn't do this 24/7, but that was always very important. And if that in school is difficult, if you have so many students or so, but now when you have a supervisor for a thesis and they know you, then this can be very valuable input. And they know you, they know what you can do, where you have some shortcomings maybe, and would support you. And that's really what we try to achieve. And there are also some qualities that you can get out of like a software tool that actually would just not be possible for a teacher. So that's actually sometimes a nice added ingredient that you can actually, with technology, you can do some things which would not be possible otherwise. And then this can really make it even better.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, in terms of your processes as a company, you're reaching out and you're requesting and asking for people to test and try out the tool and kind of iterate and give feedback on it. You're in that phase where this is not something of we have created something, and this is exactly what we wanted, and we don't want anybody else's input. This is our idea, and here you go. What I love is that co-creation element of this is what we've created, and as we iterate, we'd like your feedback to support us through that process. Can you walk through how you've kind of potentially tweaked the product based on teacher and people's input so far?
Yes, very much so, and we're happy for testers, definitely. We had a closed beta phase starting October last year. 20 schools here in Germany, and they were writing like a what do you call it? It should prepare them for university, basically. So they are supposed to have over 2 months work on one topic and prepare like an essay, let's say. And that was really like a very good test bed for what we had in mind, because that's like the first time these students would write independently for such a long time about one topic. And that's also where the teachers gave us feedback that they really, that the students are, because it's a big challenge, it's the first time for them to write this kind of big paper, there would sometimes be people that are a bit too challenged and then would resort to cheating or taking this shortcut. And that's why I think it was really good test case for us. And what we came up with first is that we would provide like a diary where people would then like speaking into their mobile, or taking pictures when they are at the library or so, it would collect and document their work process. And that was the first starting point. We would use this data then as input together with the structure of this project that the students should follow. And that was individualized, personalized by the teachers to like fit, you know, the phases they would have, like going through a research phase first, then reviewing the literature, then starting to write, then reviewing their writing. And we would combine these data points to give them some suggestions on what they should work on next. So that part was working already nicely, but we got that feedback that students might sometimes resort to copy and paste problems. And so we added actually a part where we would be able to kind of watch the progress of the student. So as you, in Microsoft Word, you might know that there's like this autosave functionality that nowadays is standard. So every minute or so, you would get a snapshot of the current text. And actually, that is what we use as data. So we don't need to go on you don't need to install anything on the computers or so. It's just that we have access to this cloud storage, to these snapshots. And then we can follow the progress that the student makes in the text. And that was very useful then to detect like the writing patterns. So if people struggle, we can see this. If they get stuck and rewrite a sentence 10 times or so, we can give some hints on how to break this writer's block. But we do also detect if people would just copy and paste something, right? So you imagine at minute one, there's no text, and then 1 minute later, there's one page of perfectly written text. But then this is clearly not typed in that time by the student. And but then we also had some students that came up with the idea, okay, now if they detect copy and paste, maybe then I should just you know, put it maybe on another screen onto the site and then type it word by word. But that is actually also, we were very happy with those tests. Those patterns are very different. As you can imagine, then the text comes in straight, one word after the other, and maybe a typo here and there, but otherwise it's just far too perfect. So those students that actually really worked on their text and thought about it, they rewrote almost each and every sentence. So hardly any sentence was the same at the end compared to when it came into the document first. And that helps us a lot then to provide feedback in a pedagogical sense. Right? So we would always give that feedback first to the student. It's not our idea to have like a report at the end to the teacher and then they would punish the student or so. So we would tell the student, actually, we detected here, it looks like you have pasted a big chunk of text and maybe you have forgotten here the citation, or is it just a note, or did you write it somewhere else? So we would always ask them to explain this, and then of course that's fine, but thereby, from the feedback we got, that really did help a lot for the students, and the teachers did not find much to complain about. Like, there were no instances of copy and paste left.
Love it. And I think what we're doing here is we're talking more broadly around how we develop a love of learning, because it's not just about banning this, like you've said already. It's not just about stopping this happening. We're talking about a love of learning, the process of learning, the personalization that comes from that, and ultimately giving a tool set or a toolkit to learners and to teachers to help with that with that stuff. So yeah, so we really appreciate your thoughts, Johannes, and we very much will be looking at what the work that you're doing with Mentify, how it develops and how it turns into that personalized tutors. We always finish our podcast with three quick fire questions. They are generally just supposed to be quick fire questions, and we're going to throw them at people, and we always ask people to give their initial thoughts. So we haven't prepared you with these, we never do, so that it's intended to be where you're at. So I'll start with the first one, and then I'll get Steve to come up next. So the future exams, So exams, future exams, do you think it is online, traditional, or scrapped?
Online.
Okay. Key skill for students in 2040.
Writing.
Writing. Okay. And education in 50 years. What is your vision for that?
It's very individualized, and it's going to be great. Available to everyone at the independent of where they come from.
Love it. Now that is what we're talking about. Quickfire, Steve.
That's we've ever had.
We've had loads of people on this. We do quickfire, and they go, well, I know it's supposed to be quickfire, but Johannes, you followed the rules, and we love that. So thank you so much for joining us on the Edgy Futurist podcast. If people want to know a little bit more about Mentify, where should they go?
To mentify.com, and we are very happy to have test us.
Perfect. Thanks, Johannes, for joining us.
Thank you, Ben and Steve.